The good news of God's love according to Luke.
Glory to you, O God.
When they came to the place that is called the Skull, they crucified Jesus there with the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. Then Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." And they cast lots to divide his clothing, and the people stood by watching, but the leaders scoffed at him, saying, "He saved others. Let him save himself, if he is the Messiah of God, his chosen one." The soldiers also mocked him, coming up and offering him sour wine and saying, "If you are the King of the Jews, save yourself." There was also an inscription over him, "This is the King of the Jews." One of the criminals who were hanged there kept deriding him and saying, "Are you not the Messiah? Save yourself and us." But the other rebuked him, saying, "Do you not fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation? And we indeed have been condemned justly, for we are getting what we deserve for our deeds, but this man has done nothing wrong." Then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." He replied, "Truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." This is the gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Please be seated. Christ the King wears a crown that is made of thorns. His throne should be made from the wood of the cross on which he suffered and died. From that throne, he offers forgiveness to the most undeserving of people. From that throne, he welcomes each and every one of us to join him in paradise today. This is not the kind of king we expect. It's not the kind of king we usually want. It is the kind of king we desperately need. It is the kind of king or ruler or political system that the world desperately needs. In America, we elect people who promise to serve us, and then we watch them serve themselves, serve their need for power, serve the needs of the few who might keep them in power. In Old Testament times, God raised up kings and queens who were to rule with righteousness and justice, words that the Bible uses to describe a society in which everyone has access to what they need to thrive, and the vulnerable are also protected from exploitation. The shepherds who are criticized and condemned in today's reading from the prophet Jeremiah are the kings and queens of Israel and Judah. In light of their failures, God promises to do three things: to gather the flock that has been scattered, to provide it with good shepherding rulers, plural, who will care for the people entrusted to them, and to send one righteous branch to rule as king forever. Giving this future king the name "God is our righteousness" is a little dig at the final king of Judah, whose name meant "God is my righteousness." We always need leaders who care more about others than they care about themselves. mention of a future for both Judah and Israel, one a kingdom in immediate jeopardy and the other a kingdom that no longer even exists, means that this promise is not locked in the events of history. It is a promise for all people. We shall all be saved. We shall all live in safety. Christians see these promises completely fulfilled in Jesus. His death and resurrection inaugurate a completely new creation in which people can once again be fruitful and multiply. But there are lots of people of different cultures and religions and within our own who are still waiting for those promises to be fulfilled. They are promises for people who long for change, for justice, and for life. This king whose coming is promised through Jeremiah is then celebrated in the opening chapters of the Gospel of Luke. Today's psalm, the song sung by Zechariah, the father of John the Baptist, celebrates the fact that God didn't just send a righteous king, God came to us in person to be our righteous king. The mighty Savior, born of the house of David, is God in human flesh and blood, reaching out with human hands to offer tender compassion, taking us by the hand to lead us out of death's shadows and into the way of peace. But Jesus is not the only fulfillment of God's promises. The death and resurrection of Jesus fill us with the same holy power to reach out with divine compassion and to work hard for divine justice. Jeremiah longed for the rule of a righteous king. Zechariah's song celebrated a God who rescues us from all darkness and from the shadows of death and sin, freeing us from the power of fear and shame. The letter to the Colossians describes this as being rescued from the power of darkness and being gently and lovingly placed within the kingdom that is ruled by Christ, a kingdom to which all of the corrupt and self-serving kingdoms and empires of the world must submit. Jesus puts a human face on a God we often experience as invisible. It is in his kingdom that we are transformed to be the people we were created to be, reconciled and at peace with God and with one another. Jesus's voluntary suffering and death fill us with life and joy and hope, with all of the strength that comes from God's glorious power, so that we too can work for the renewal of God's good creation until the day when all things, all creatures, and all people are reconciled to God. Note the letter's relentless emphasis on the word all. The author of Colossians prays that all of God's people will be able to endure all things with all the strength that comes from Christ, the one in whom all things are created, who is before all things, in whom all things hold together, the one who is first in all things, in whom all the fullness of God dwells, and through whom all things are reconciled to God. Nothing lies outside the wounded hands of Christ our King. In any situation we might face, he is already there. There is no place and no person in which he is not already hidden in plain sight. This is the power of Jesus our King, the firstborn of creation, who became the firstborn of the dead in order to fill us with life so that God can have first place in all of creation.